This is a production of the Z-Talk Radio Network. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Z-Talk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Good evening, everybody. You are listening to The Buzz on ztalkradio.com. And joining us is your usual host and hostess. You've got...
Molly.
And, of course, you've got me. Welcome, everybody. And tonight is going to be a special, special show because if I can kind of put it out there, our guest tonight is kind of making a debut of sorts. I'm not going to get into it too deep and ruin it for her, but we're being joined by Sherry Webb tonight, who, if I had to say, she is an intuitive healer. Me and Molly was discussing it off air, and it's remarkable what she does, a remote intuitive healer. She can heal from a distance, and she can blend with your energy and kind of remove your pains and your ailments and help you along. My gosh, Molly, she just does so much. So much. But how have you been in Tucson?
I've been wonderful. I was going to say we may keep our own speed dial.
You know what? It's not a bad idea at all. In fact, I have her number, but I'm going to let her give it out.
Okay. No, I've been doing great. Of course, it's hot here as usual, you know, 106, 107. But back home, I know it's in the 90s, and it probably feels this hot back there. But, of course, the humidity makes it even worse there. So I'm glad to be where I am. I'm very happy to be quiet. Yeah, they tell me that we went up to Mount Lemmon yesterday, and it was a nice 77 degrees. And, of course, everybody, half of Tucson was up there, I think, because it was so nice. And it was just great. But, of course, you're about 9,000 feet above sea level up there, too, so.
Oh, it is beautiful. I miss it so badly. Yeah, it's been 97 degrees here. Real feel, probably 110.
Probably. Probably warmer than what it is here.
Yes. But I'm just kind of excited. Kind of excited about tonight. I've been talking with Sherry pretty much all weekend. And, you know, you know she discovered her abilities right around the age of 5.
You know, a lot of people, that's when they notice their abilities.
Yeah, I wonder why.
You know, I don't know. You know, that's about the time that I noticed that I could have contact with spirits and so on and so forth. And just about everybody that we interview, you know, when we ask them when they first realized that they had abilities, they said, oh, around 5 or 6. And I don't know, you know, why that is, why that's the magic number.
I really don't know. Sounds like we might be having a little bit of issues. How do we sound? I'm going to check in the chat room.
Okay.
Somebody says it sounds like there are chipmunks. So I hope that's not me. I find my voice quite appealing myself.
Alvin.
But yeah, you know, she also has, she discovered her a ministry. I call it a ministry, or a gift, a responsibility of prophetic dreams. So she has developed ways of helping others using this, counseling and educating us also in diet and supplements. And she's helped many through life traumas and has helped others discover how to use their gifts. So, oh, okay.
Sounds rude.
Yep, sounds good. Good so far. Okay, we're off. Here we go. So, but it's,
I apologize because we have internet problems where I'm staying, and so I'm having to use my cell phone. So if there is, if I sound like a chipmunk, well, then it's probably me. Or my phone, I should say, not me. I try not to turn into monk very often, but you know when it happens.
Yeah, no worries, no worries. We will make it through. Last week, we had Christopher Rowland on. I wished you could have heard him clearly, because that was an absolutely awesome show. I was hoping to play some clips of his music tonight, but unfortunately, I cannot get the clips to play and to open up. So while we talk to Sherry tonight, I'm going to continue to work on that. Because I think that there's probably somebody out there that really need that healing. They need that touch of spirit, and which is why we're getting so much resistance today.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've always managed to push through it together, Molly.
Yes, we have.
So
we may have, you know.
Yeah, so we are not going to be discouraged, and we're going to push on through this.
But, you know, should I get quiet, well, you know that I'm having problems, that I'm either cannot hear very well or my phone's cutting out or something. So I'm just going to keep my fingers crossed and hope I can stay with this tonight.
Well, you know, it's not the same without you.
Well, I'm here in spirit, if nothing else.
Ah, I get it. We're here in spirit.
Yes.
Oh, my God. You know, speaking of prophecy, speaking of prophetic things, you know, I've been watching the news very, very closely. And we have had people on that have prophesied things or have given predictions. Lamont Hamilton being one of them, and we've had a variety of others. And I kind of chart this stuff. Do you realize that Germany has had 4 terror attacks in 1 week?
No, I have not been able to listen to the news either because I don't have a television here. I'm totally out of the loop.
Oh, my goodness. You know, they had the attack. They had one attack that seemed to kind of spur the others. And they had a young man earlier last week who went through a train with an axe and a knife and just started hacking people up. Then, yes. And then today, they had another person do a suicide bombing. Then they had the shooting in the mall over the weekend. I mean, what is going on? We understand through these predictions, though, that there was going to be mass chaos in Europe. And I believe Lamont said that as well. You know, and you used to think of Europe as a relatively stable place.
Right.
But I will be darned if these prophecies and everything are not coming true.
Well, I really believe we're living in the last days. I mean, you know, it's getting, you know, more and more, you know, biblical and, you know, like you said, like Notre Dame and all of them, you know, saying, you know, prophesizing and stuff, and it's just, it's getting scary,
Yeah, and it's not, you know, getting much better here. We have a lot of stuff going on in the news. You had Ted Cruz, who refused to endorse Donald Trump at the RNC, or Republican National Convention. And that made a big, you know, a big to-do. And they called that chaos. And then today, well, actually, it began this weekend. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who was the chair of the Democratic National Convention, was caught, you know, with her pants down, not literally, but her emails were leaked where they had been tipping the scale in favor of Hillary. So she had to step down. And so the DNC, Democratic National Convention, today is in utter chaos. Oh, my God, yeah. Molly, this has got to be the end days.
You know, I don't know. I'm afraid, you know, it seems like nobody is really for either party this time. You know, you have some that are totally with it either way. And then, you know, the majority seems to be kind of down the middle and doesn't like either party. And, you know, it's like, well, if one wins or the other, well, then there's going to be chaos and all kinds of stuff going to happen because they're not going to be happy with the outcome.
Yeah, fire in the streets, you know.
Exactly. I mean, you know, they may have to call martial law for it's all over with.
Oh, please pray that we do not declare martial law. That means this president gets a third term because they can suspend the elections.
Yeah.
But you know, I said all that to say this. You know, we've had people that are remarkably gifted and accurate on this show that have predicted things exactly like this. Now, we give them context, but these events are happening. They're happening right in front of us. And that's probably why shows like this are so important, because do we talk about negative things? Yes. Yes, we do. But we also show that we can overcome, that there are healings and there are positive messages to be found in all of this. For example, look at Christopher Rowland last week. You know, as a young man, grew up on a reservation. And those are very dark places at times, very depressing. And he went through a lot of terrible things in his life, but he overcame and expressed himself through art. And through that art, he began to heal others. Our guest tonight has come through many things in her own life, and I'm going to let her share those. But she overcame using gifts and using sheer strength of will. And that's a message that needs to be heard. And so tonight, what I'm going to do, I'm going to ask our listeners that whenever we post the upcoming shows, please share those. Please share those with your friends, because in this world that's on fire, we all need a positive message. And I think that we here at The Buzz, Molly and I think we do bring a positive, you know, message, you know, to the listeners. So let's get
anyhow.
we sure do. If nothing else, sometimes we overcome ourselves right here on the show. but anyways, let's do this, Molly. Let's go to our first break, and then when we come back, we'll be joined by Sherry Webb.
Okay, do we want to have callers call in tonight?
Yes, I was going to put out the number when we come back, but let's go ahead and do that now. If you'd like to call in with any questions, and tonight I'm sure we're going to get a couple call-ins, that number is
262-672-2488.
There you go. Good. We did it, Molly. High five.
Yay.
Okay. Well, everybody, just stick with us, and we'll be right back with Sherry Webb.
Yes, I just want to come out. Fox News Radio. I'm Jane Metzler. It was not a job she expected.
I am honored to accept this gavel as permanent chair of the Democratic National Convention.
Ohio Congresswoman Marsha Fudge now chairing the Democratic National Convention after another controversy over emails had the party's chair announcing her resignation. Fox's Grinnell Scott live from the convention in Philadelphia, where the name of the party's nominee is being mentioned frequently tonight, but Bernie Sanders and his supporters are still in the spotlight. Grinnell?
That's right, Jane. All day long in Center City, Philadelphia, and at the Wells Fargo Center tonight, the focus has been on Bernie Sanders. And the question has been, what will his supporters do? Sanders is urging them to be respectful of the process as he endorses Hillary Clinton as the nominee of the party, but many of the Sanders supporters are vowing to continue his revolution to change the way elections work and how campaigns are run. The Sanders supporters are holding fast to their belief that Sanders is the best candidate to face off with and beat Donald Trump in November, and they're making their voices heard tonight, Jay.
Thanks, Grinnell. Donald Trump and his running mate Mike Pence are making an appeal to Sanders supporters.
If the system wasn't gamed, he would have beat her. He would have beaten her.
The two campaigning today in Virginia, home state of Hillary Clinton's running mate, Tim Kaine. The FBI investigating just how WikiLeaks obtained those DNC emails. Forensic evidence said to link the hack to Russian intelligence. The Clinton campaign has said the emails were leaked to benefit Trump. A former employee in custody in the fatal stabbing of at least 15 people at a facility for the handicapped outside Tokyo. 45 others wounded. You're listening to Fox News Radio, Fair and Balanced.
All eyes now turn to the Democrats. After a hotly contested primary fight, party leaders have united to take on Trump. But how will Hillary Clinton officially rally the base?
Let's make this happen together and win the election.
One team is bringing you the latest reports, powerful interviews, and every big moment live from Philadelphia. Full coverage of the Democratic National Convention starts tonight on Fox News Channel, America's election headquarters.
In this town, news changes in an instant. It's my job to be on top of it all. The players, the pundits, the power brokers, everyone's got a stake, an agenda. I'm here to cut through the talking points and get to the heart of the issue. Laws, policies, key decisions that impact our lives need accurate, timely reporting. That's fair and balanced. There's plenty of room for political opinion, but only one place for political news. Watch Special Report, weeknights on Fox News Channel.
It wasn't terrorism. Two teens fatally shot last night. 20 others injured outside a nightclub in Fort Myers, Florida. Three persons of interest now in custody. A shooting in Las Vegas stemming from some early morning Pokemon hunting.
Police say six people were playing the popular Pokemon Go in a public park in Vegas just after 4 a.m. when two people drove up in an SUV and demanded their possessions. The would-be robbers had a handgun, but so did one of the Pokemon players, who has a concealed weapons permit. He drew his weapon and each side fired. One Pokemon player was shot in the stomach, and a man believed to be from the SUV also went to the hospital with a gunshot wound to the back. Neither injury considered life-threatening. Charges are expected against the robbery suspect and a juvenile who was driving the SUV. Lisa Brady, Fox News.
Researchers are doing the math, estimating just how the Rio Summer Olympics will affect the spread of the Zika virus here.
Between 3 and 37 people attending the Olympics will likely contract the Zika virus and bring it to their home countries, according to research from Yale published in the Annals of Internal Medicine. The experts developed the modeling study by looking at how the dengue virus, spread by the same mosquitoes as Zika, impacted those at the World Cup in Rio 2 years ago, applying mathematical formulas and taking other evidence into account. Another modeling study, this time from the Department of Biological Sciences and Eck Institute for Global Health at the University of Notre Dame, found that as many as 1.65 million pregnant women could be infected with Zika by the end of the first wave of the epidemic. That study also looked at viruses spread by the Zika mosquito. It's published in the journal Nature Microbiology. Chris Honig, Fox News.
The NFL finding no credible evidence that Peyton Manning was provided with human growth hormone or any other prohibited substances. Al Jazeera America made the allegation in a documentary last fall. Manning vehemently denied it. I'm Jane Metzler, Fox News Radio.
You are listening to The Buzz on the ZTalk Radio Network. Imagine the possibilities. Now back to the show with Kevin Thompson and Molly Spence. The best in alternative talk radio.
Alright everybody, we are back. You are listening to The Buzz on ZTalk Radio Network. And joining us for the next hour, hour and a half, is Sherry Webb. Sherry, welcome to the show.
Hey Kevin. Welcome. Hey Molly. Thank you. Thank you all for having me tonight.
It's a little bit different on the other side of the mic, huh? You usually get to sit in the chat room, but tonight you're on the spot. You're in the hot seat.
Put me on the spot.
So, Sherry, I kind of gave you a mincemeat introduction at the beginning. You know, I described you as an intuitive healer, an intuitive counselor, and a remote intuitive healer. You are able to reach out and touch spirit from a distance, which is a rare gift. Tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and what brought you to this point in your life with your using your gifts.
Wow. And I'm glad you said intuitive, because I think on the thing that you posted, it had said psychic, which I guess in a way, because it's the psyche and everything, it's that. But a lot of people misconstrue that, so I always say intuitive because I don't tell people their future. if something comes to me that there's an event or something that they need to watch out for, then certainly. But I mean, if somebody asks me, hey, when am I going to get married, or, you know, am I going to have money and do this? I don't know. I just don't do that. I say only God knows. So, usually my gifts, and I like to keep it in that way, is the messages that I get. I'm a medium, so when the messages come across, it's usually for that healing purpose. I don't only heal pain-wise and energy-wise that way, but my healing encompasses giving a message to somebody who's hurting. I'll share a story with that in a minute. But like Kevin said, it started when I was 5. And it wasn't in a very nice way that I learned about my gifts. And this is probably the downside, the darker side of being a person with gifts. There were some things going on at home, spiritual things that weren't necessarily in the light. Somebody had, I don't know if it was my mother's friend or something, but they had brought a Ouija board into the house. And thankfully, I was too young and I didn't touch that, but it brought through something very, very negative. And because I was the sensitive and the gifted one, it kind of came after me. So I would have my bed shake, and I would, you know, get up in the middle of the night and go to my dad and say, Daddy, my bed is shaking, you know. And my dad was of a mind not to give it any attention. You know, he'd say, don't go looking behind doors unless you find something. So he would hand me a cross and tell me to go back to bed and say my prayers. And I'm like, but Daddy, I'm 5. You're supposed to protect
Come with me.
So I had to learn at a young age kind of to protect myself. But while that was going on, I did get up one night and I went to my parents' room for comfort and shelter, and they were sleeping. And when I got to their door frame, I just heard this guttural growl that just rooted me to the floor. And my reasoning at five was, okay, one of them is snoring. So I'm going to stand here and wait to see which one, you know, if they're snoring. And of course, it wasn't that. And my mom let out just this little snort, you know, of snoring. And I told myself that that's what it was. And I ran into the room and got down in between them in the bed. And as soon as I laid down and pulled the covers over me, I was pinned. I couldn't move. I couldn't speak. I couldn't do anything. And it was the scariest thing. And I looked over and saw this horrible face on my brother's crib. And from that night began my, I guess, me becoming a spiritual warrior, I guess, because I battled that all of my life until, you know, as the years wore on, I'm doing battle. And it was first battling for myself, and then I was battling for other people. And I've just had to grow in my spirituality and my strength to be able to combat that. And now, you know, I can pretty much catch it when it comes or see where it's coming from. You know, being gifted, Kevin, you know, you're around certain people, and, you know, sometimes, you know, they're energy vampires or there's a negative spirit around, and, you know, you're that flame. And they're attracted, and they're like, hey, you know. But, you know, that was the downside of it. And I just kind of had to deal with that. And, of course, my parents brought in, you know, priests and everybody else to kind of help because there were other things going on. But then when I was 11, I started having prophetic dreams. And I didn't understand. I had a dream. My very first dream I'll never forget was I dreamt that a woman was hitting my mother with something metal. And I'm from, you know, Hollywood, Florida, Miramar, Florida, and there was a pharmacy called Hillwood Pharmacy. So in this dream, she's hitting my mother with this piece of metal in front of Hillwood Pharmacy. And it was just so real. Like, I woke up just out of breath, just so scared because it was like this was so real. And I told my mother, I'm like, Mom, you know, I had this dream. She's like, oh, it's just a dream. Okay. And I said, I don't think so. This seemed pretty real. And so 2 days later, lo and behold, we were going down the street, and when we turned in front of Hillwood Pharmacy, there was a girl in a car who was weaving in and out of traffic and slammed right into us, T-boned us. So there was the girl hitting us with something metal. So I looked at my mom and I said, I told you. So that's what started for me. And I realized that there was a 2-day window, but I didn't know why I was being shown these things. And of course, being young, I felt helpless. What do I do with this information?
Right.
And because of all of the negative stuff that had gone on that we battled through, the negative spiritual stuff, I just kept telling God, if it's not from you, I don't want it. If it's not from you, I don't want it. And I constantly said that. And I never asked why. I just kept saying, if it's not from you, I don't want it. Well, apparently it was from him because I just stayed. And the gifts developed as I got older. So that was kind of, you know, the beginning for me. And they kind of were hindered, a little bit, like most of everything was in dream time, because in my waking life, it was very, very hectic and chaotic. I had a very difficult marriage, and it just kept me, I was so stressed out that there was no way that anything positive was coming, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah,
so my focus was on that. And not, you know, I would get feelings. I was certainly blessed with the gift of discernment, so I would know if something evil was around or, you know, sense the spirits. I read people. I read pictures. I have friends send me stuff all the time. People, they want to date.
Should I date this person?
You know? Sure, it's a service I provide all of my friends.
You're a human criminal background check.
There you go. And I'm very seldom wrong. I say my guides are very seldom wrong. So, that was difficult. But the healing part came. It's a kind of neat little story. The prophetic dreams had started, and this certain one lasted a week. And every night I would find myself at the end of a pier gagging on dead fish. Now, I hate fish. I don't eat fish. And so I'm saying, why am I having this dream? Why am I at this pier? And the last night of the dream, I was on a Navy ship out in the middle of the ocean, and my friend Frank was on the ship. So that I have to decipher these things sometimes, and that told me where I was. So Frank lived in New Jersey and worked in New York. So that told me that we were off the coast of New York, New Jersey, on this ship. And I said to him, "You have to get off this boat. The storm's coming." And he says, "I'm fine. You have to go." And I'm like, "Okay." So I dive into the ocean, and I'm swimming. You know, I swim the length of the ocean to shore. And as I'm trying to pull myself out on the sand, there's people there from the Red Cross. And they say, "Can you help us?"
They asked for help?
Sure. Sure. I just swam the length of the ocean. Let me help you. I always want to help people. And I said, the only thing that I was afraid of was, you know, sharks. And they said, "Well, one followed you in." And I said, "Well, thank God it didn't get me." So they took me into this cave. And in the cave was a husband and a wife and their infant baby, and the baby was choking on seaweed. And nobody's doing anything, and I'm like, "Give me the baby." And I took the baby, and as soon as I put the baby over my shoulder, I heard the Holy Spirit say to me, "I am giving you the gift to heal." And I patted the baby on the back, I coughed up the seaweed, the baby's fine.
There
I wake up
you
from
go.
The dream going, "What the heck?"
Yeah, you were so, exchanging.
Yeah. So I was like, "Okay, this is just really weird. I don't understand this." And the next morning, I wake up and I turn on the news, which I usually don't watch because it's so depressing, and being an empath, it's very hard. And I see that Hurricane Hugo came and hit off the coast of New York, New Jersey. And they found a man and his pregnant wife on a makeshift raft. And what they were surviving off of was, like, fish and fish.
And fish and seaweed.
Yeah. And I was like, "All right." And I'm like, "What do I do with this information?" This is just weirding me out. I don't understand why I had this dream. And, of course, at that time still, I didn't ask God. And I called my aunt, who had healing gifts, too. And I said, "I just need to talk to you because I just don't understand." And she says, "Well, maybe you were traveling. Maybe you astral projected. Maybe you traveled to help these people." And at the time, I thought, she's out of her mind. What is she talking about? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't think so. You know, it was long before I understood any of this. So it just always baffled me. But I knew that I had a two-day window. And I always just felt so very helpless. So if I knew a person or I knew whatever, I just, you would say, you know, you got to be careful, please be careful. My husband was, this is where it shocked him, and it was because he doesn't believe in any of this, and he didn't like for me to talk about it. I'm not with him any longer, but he was like, "You know, come on, Sherry." And I had a dream that he's an aircraft mechanic, and I had a dream that he was working on this plane, and I could see the initials of the plane were CC, and that the tail broke off, you know, in flight. So, of course, I knew I had a two-day window, and for the next 2 days, I told him, "Please don't go up in any planes. Whatever you do, please don't go up in any planes," because when he worked on them, he would have to go up with the pilot and, you know, I'm saying, and see that everything was okay. And in my mind, I'm saying CC, and I'm thinking back, whose plane has initials CC? Not Continental. It's not, you know, I'm trying to rack my brain, and I didn't know. And I kept begging him, please don't go up in that, don't go up in any planes. And he's like, all right, you know. Well, a few days later, he comes home. He's just standing there stunned looking at me. And he says, imagine my surprise. And I said, what's that? And he was working on a plane for Circus Circus out of
Las Vegas.
And his partner put the wrong size rivets in the tail of the plane. So had that plane gone up, the tail would have
snapped right off.
Wow.
So that's kind of how the family started realizing these things. And, you know, there was a lot of I told you so's. It just doesn't seem like anybody listens, you know? So that's how the prophetic dreams went. And it was not until about 10 years ago, and keep in mind, I'm still saying to God, if it's not from you, I don't want it. We had a thing happen here in Atlanta where a guy shot up the courthouse, and I came home from work, and the news was on, and I was getting all of this information, like where he was. They thought he was going to Florida, and I was getting, you know, other information. And I said to my husband, he's not going to Florida, you know, and I mentioned it was Buckhead, and I mentioned a truck and this and that, and of course he's like, cut it out, Sherry. And I'm like, I don't know how to tell you that I know, that I know, that I know. And it was the first time that I ever saw a vision while I was awake. And I saw this woman as if I was looking at somebody under a black light. I saw the color of her hair, the way it was pulled up. I saw her in a praying position. And I said to my husband, he has a hostage. He's like, how do you know? I said, I don't know. I just know that he does. With every fiber of my being, I said, I have to tell somebody. Well, who are you going to tell? I don't know.
The FBI.
They're going to think you're involved. They're going to think you're crazy. You're not calling anybody. So I called my mom because she's the only person that I could ever talk to about these things. Because granted, up until maybe the last 6 years or so, I didn't say anything to anybody. You know, I never spoke about it in school. I just, you know, just always kept it to myself. And I called my mom and I told her, and she said, well, Sherry, what are you going to do? You can't tell anybody. You're going to have to sit on this one. So it troubled me greatly because the feeling was just like I needed to do something. And I came home from work the next day, and lo and behold, there's the girl that I saw. I looked at my husband and I said, told you. So I was like, it was the first time in my life that I said to God, why do you show me these things when there's nothing that I can do? And he answered me. And he said, because, Sherry, I just wanted you to pray. And I said, that's it? All these years?
Sometimes it's that simple.
It is. God is that simple. I just want you all to know that he is that simple. And my next question was, why did you never tell me that? And he answered, you never asked. And he's absolutely right. I never asked. I just said, if it's not from you, I don't want it. So that was just such an impact to me. And I knew that the greatest thing and the greatest way that I could help somebody through these dreams was when I had a dream like that, to pray for them, because prayer is very powerful. And apparently, you know, God felt that, you know, that was my way of healing, and that was a powerful way for me to help people that, you know, I'm not around and that are a very far distance away from me. So that was a very big impact. And so I'm careful. I had to kind of retrain myself to when I do have those dreams, I have to remember, you know, pray and try to help the person mm-hmm. that way.
So, wow, you've said a lot there. Have you ever warned somebody, I mean, like a stranger? We've talked about family, but have you ever dreamt about a stranger and been able to warn them?
I do, and I do, you know, like for friends and things like that. I try not, you know, it's very difficult. Mm-hmm. To go up to somebody and say, I had a bad dream about you.
Or,
you know, and it's very hard because, you know, you freak people out. And
yes,
so yes, I have had that. And what I would say is, you know, I have a feeling or something, or, you know, kind of ask what, if maybe they have something going on within the next few days, or I might just say, you know, in a special way, you know, kind of be careful when you're driving. Kind of the way you would tell somebody, drive safely, mm-hmm. you know, things like that, because you can't just go up to somebody and say, hey, I had a dream about you and it wasn't good. And so
yes.
I try to put it in the most delicate way possible. If it's friends or family and they know me now, and a lot of them will go, please don't dream about me. I'm like, I can't control what I dream. Or they'll say, if you ever have a dream about me, please tell me, you know. Then I let them know, you know, kind of be careful, because I would still, you know, even after that first thing with my mom, she still wasn't believing. And, you know, my second dream was somebody trying to run her off the road. And I told her, and she was still of the mind, it's just a dream. And 2 days later, we're sitting at the dinner table, and, you know, I heard her telling my dad that someone tried to run her off the road, and I was just so upset. And I said, I told you. Why don't you ever listen to me? So it's been, well, it's been something.
I'm sorry,
I'm
Molly.
Sorry.
I said, after a while, I would think that everyone would listen to you when you have proven yourself to them. You do,
but, you know, Molly, I would like to say that, but it's not always so within families. I don't know what it is about, I just don't know. I, you know, sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't afterwards. I'm going to tie this in with how my healing kind of, when I realized the power of it, I had a dream that I was driving in this white van with blue interior, and my husband's friend was driving the truck, his friend Jack. And my sister and I were in this van in the back, and we're driving, and we had gone past a cemetery. And I couldn't understand, and I'm saying to myself, why are we in this van? And in this dream, my grandmother, who's been dead since 1977, it's like she came back. And I'm like, Graham, what are you doing here? Why are you here? And I knew, because when I'm dreaming, I know I'm dreaming, and I talk to myself, and I know that there's significance. And I'm like, why are you here? And she never speaks. But I knew something was up, and I said to my sister, why are we in this van? You know, we should be with Grandma. We know this is the only time we get to, you know, be with her. And we were, you know, around with the family. And again, like I told you, I had to piece things together. And in the dream, she was talking to my mom about CDs, which in the dream, it seemed like bank CDs, but nevertheless, it was CDs and the number 1500. So 2 days later, it was a Sunday, and I had gone out to the mailbox because I didn't check my mail on Saturday, and lo and behold, in my mailbox were CDs, you know, from that CD club where you could just order your CDs. So there were CDs, and then my husband hadn't told me, but he told me that day that his friend Jack had co-signed on a van for him. And the van was white with blue interior. And he couldn't pick it up until the following day at 3 o'clock. So I had to piece that together, that 3 o'clock in military time was 1500. So I knew something was up. And my dad and my mom had picked my daughter up for the weekend to take her to a church carnival, and they lived an hour south of me. And I had been in a car accident, so I didn't have a car. And, of course, my husband didn't have the van yet. And my parents had come to take her, and my dad was going to bring her home on Sunday. And he traveled, he covered 14 states, and he had been home and doing yard work and everything that weekend. And I said, Dad, don't worry about it. Don't worry about bringing her home tonight, because he was leaving for Orlando the next day. And I said, you can just drop her off on your way. And he said, no, I know you need her home, blah, 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 I'll bring her. And I just didn't want him to get on the road and come. And he insisted. And my mother did not come with him this time. So when he reached my house, I noticed that something was off, and he was pacing my kitchen. And I said, Daddy, are you all right? And he said, yeah, why? And I said, no reason. Just want to know, are you going to be okay to drive home and all that? And he said, yeah. It just seemed odd, and I knew something was wrong, but I didn't want to scare him either. And it was about 8 o'clock at night, and we drove the turnpike. And back then, there were no cell phones. And if you drive the turnpike, the only way that you have a phone is if you get to a rest station. And I told him, make sure you call me as soon as you get home. And when he left, I called my mom, and I said, I don't want to alarm you, but I had one of those dreams, and I have a feeling. I said, please have Daddy call as soon as he gets home. And she said, okay. And I waited about 45 minutes, and of course I told my husband something's wrong, and of course it was cut it out, Sherry. So 45 minutes go by, and I call my mom, is he home yet? And she's like, no, what's wrong? You're scaring me. And I said, I don't know. I said, but it's a strong feeling. Please have him call me. 15 minutes later, he called, and I just cried, and I said, thank you, Daddy. You know, I'm glad you're home. Thank you for taking, Taylor home. And he says, we do what we have to do. I love you, and I'll talk to you tomorrow. And as soon as he hung up with me, he went into the bathroom, and brain aneurysm ruptured. Mm. And it just brought him to his knees. And it was in the central communicator, and you just don't survive those. And he crawled out to the living room. He thought that somebody had followed him in the house and hit him over the head with a baseball bat because there were some, robberies in the area. And he struggled and crawled to make sure that my mom and my brother were all right. And I get teary-eyed.
It's okay. It was an emotional experience.
It was so profound. So they took him to the hospital, and, once they got him there, of course, I get the call from my brother that something's wrong. They didn't know it was an aneurysm at the time. And I felt so helpless, and I'm like, come get me. And he's like, I can't come get you right now. We don't even know what it is. Just sit tight. And I'm trying. I called everybody I knew to try to get me down there, and I could not get a ride, and I was frantic, and I was going crazy. And I knew that something was terribly wrong. And, of course, I hung up the phone and started screaming at my husband, I told you, nobody listens to me. And I'm like, I need to get there somehow. And my brother said, just, sit tight. And, of course, I was panicking. And when he finally called me back, he's like, get your stuff together. I'm coming to get you. Dad had an aneurysm rupture, and it's not good. So by the time he came and got me and we got back down to the hospital, it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, 2-3 o'clock in the morning. He had over 2 pints of blood on his brain, which is toxic.
Yes.
And
a lot of pressure.
Oh, yeah. And they could not do surgery because they could not get his vital signs to stabilize. So they let us back into the room for a little while. And I just stood over him, and this is where I realized the power of the healing. And I laid my hands on him, and I started praying. And then I just kept saying, it's all right, Daddy, give it to me. It's all right, Daddy, give it to me. And as I was saying that, I started to feel his headache. I was taking on the headache. And as I was doing that and standing there, I'm watching, and his vital signs started to stabilize where they had been erratic. And I just kept doing that and praying over him and just saying, give it to me. And the nurse came in, and she's like, okay, you guys are going to have to go. You're going to have to leave. And because they stabilized, they were able to bring him into surgery. And he survived, and that was an absolute miracle. Wow. And so that was the realization of, okay, I guess he wasn't kidding when he said, I'm giving you the gift to heal, because you don't get an instruction manual. You just don't know. And I had to pray for teachers, and I guess there's a saying, if I say this right, the teacher will appear when the student is ready.
Yes.
So that's how all of the healing and stuff began. And then I would just, I kind of kept it within the family. And, like, I would do healing for my daughter if she had a fever and stuff like that, because I had no concept of how far-reaching it was or what I should be doing. So as I got older, and God did send teachers, and Kevin, it's just like you and I have been talking, you know, we meet people for a reason, and especially mm-hmm. within the last few years, we are in that, we're being, people are becoming awake, and we're in that quickening
yes.
where we're being brought together with people with light gifts. So that was the beginning of the healing phase.
You know, you've got a couple of folks in the chat room. I think you're in the chat room as well, where V says that she understands where you're coming from. You know, this is why we share these stories, because you always, like you described, you always feel alone, and you have these gifts, and you don't know what to do with them. Well, you know, what do I do with this? And it's important to know that you're not alone. Like me and Molly, we work together, we investigate together, and she completes me. But we would have never known that had we not have been in this crazy little world. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, Molly. You always feel alone. And from what you've described in the beginning, it was more instinct-driven. This is your father. This is your father laying here, and you think that he's on death's door. So instinct took over with a gift. And now you're meeting others who have similar stories.
And it's so comforting to, and it's like a relief when you find somebody that says, I go through the same thing, I understand, and this is what happened to me. You know, Veronique and I have spoken, and we were like, wow, you know, we have so much in common. And, you know, when I was a young girl, like I said, because, you know, your parents would say, you know, there's no such thing as ghosts. There's no, you know, that, you know, it's just a dream. You know, it keeps getting pushed under the rug till you finally just stop talking to people. You stop, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you shut down.
And you just shut down. And so I didn't speak about it really at all. Even sometimes, you know, when you go to church, I was raised Catholic, you know, now I'm just non-denominational, I'm spiritual, you know, I've seen so many things and I've experienced so many things and God is in so many things. I just say that I am spiritual. But you know, Christians are taught, well, that's from the devil, you know, and they're quick to throw things at you. You know, Leviticus, you know, don't call up spirits. Okay, I don't call them up.
They're already
they
here.
Come to me. They're around. They come to me. I'm not, all I'm doing is passing a message. And I'll tell you, when I worked for a vitamin store chain. There were days that I had many people that would come in there, and you know, it's very hard to have a dialogue with somebody, or if this comes up, you know, you don't know. It's like spirit wants you to say something and you're like, okay, this is my place of work.
Yes.
What do I do? You know, do I do this? Do I open my mouth? And what I learned was just to let spirit lead, you know. And I would have people come in and say, I have no need for anything in here. I was just pulled in here. I don't know why. And then we would chat, and then I would, you know, there would be, that's where kind of where the counseling came in, because spirit would step in and I would, you know, give a message. And, you know, I've had people whose child had passed away, or their loved one, and never got a chance to say, I'm sorry, or things like that. And so to me, that was a wonderful thing because I always wanted to help people and comfort people, and I was able to do that. And so it's so humbling because I say thank you for allowing me to be the vessel to bring comfort and healing to somebody in this way. And I always say, I'm nobody. I'm a cracked vessel. I leak water, you know, but God still chooses to use me. And that is an amazing thing.
Yeah, I think we're putting the path where we're needed, you know. I think
absolutely.
We're all putting the path where we're needed.
Yeah. You know, Molly, when we're open to it, in other words, I believe that on a daily basis, people have the opportunity to be that to somebody else, whether it's a smile, whether it's a helping hand, whether it's a kind word. You don't know where somebody is standing. You don't know if that person is, you know, standing on the edge of going over, and just something so simple as saying, I love you, or you matter, something encouraging pulls that person back.
And in
today's, you know, the way it is today, people aren't really doing that. And there's so many people hurting and so many people that just turn away and go with inside themselves or think that there's no other way and wanting to commit suicide and things like that because they feel like nobody cares. But we are given an opportunity every single day to touch somebody else's life. And that's what it's all about. And again, it's rewarding. And it's just an honor to be able to do that.
You know who I have found is actually more open to spirit are inmates. I know that seems a little odd, but they're more open. And I think it's because they're so closed off and they're in such a negative environment, and we cram more and more and more negativity into a little room, that whenever they get the opportunity and you interact with them and you begin speaking for spirit and prophesying into their lives a healing message, they're like sponges. You know, they're like sponges.
I think that probably comes from, too, because now they're in this captive place, right? Whether you're captive literally in prison.
Yes.
Or you're a captive of your life, of some situation where you feel you have no way out of, right? So what do? Now you start searching. You know, now you start calling out. So you're actually put in that position to look, you know, for a deeper meaning. So, you know, like there has to be something else to life, you know, and so that's why they become more open, because now they're in search mode. Now they're not being so controlled by what's outside and in the environment. Well, now they have to come inside. Now they have to go within.
Absolute sense. That makes absolute sense, and that's truth. That is truth, yeah. Right there, listeners. Because you know, we were talking a little bit earlier that it's difficult to just walk up to a stranger and begin to either prophesy or begin to speak for the deceased.
Yeah.
Molly, you and I have talked about this a lot. Imagine this, listeners. I'm sitting in, was it Chili's? I think I was sitting in a Chili's restaurant with my family, and Kathy recognized that look that I get when I'm, you know, picking up something or somebody's speaking. I don't know what it looks like, Molly. You can probably tell.
I know it very well.
But you know, Kathy, my wife, she's like, well, you're getting something? I was like, yes, there's a man over here, an elderly man. He's pointing to this elderly woman who's sitting at a table with other people. And he's like, tell her that our daughter is taking all the money. Tell her.
Oh, Lord.
Tell her, you know, and I was like, oh, what do you do? I, you know, Joe Nobody can't just walk up to this woman and say, ma'am, I'm in touch with your deceased husband. He wants you to know that your daughter is taking the money.
And would it be the daughter being?
Yeah, I mean, that's a difficult thing. However, I can go into a jail cell, strike up a conversation, God will begin to communicate to this inmate, and they're absolutely receptive.
I think Spirit makes the way for you. And even when approaching somebody and talking to somebody, even if it isn't to deliver a message, even if it's just to have a difficult conversation with somebody that you have had an argument with, or you know that the topic or the situation, you know, the subject that you're about to talk to them about is going to be met with resistance or anger or something, I always just pray. Mm-hmm. And I ask God to prepare that person's heart to receive what I need to tell them and to just go before me and open the way. And that always kind of takes care of it for me, you know, because there's, even like today, okay, in anticipation of the show, I mean, there were just all these little things that were trying to, like, take away from it or you know what I'm saying, cause a distraction.
Yes.
And that happens. You know, the other side wants to do that. Especially if it's meant for good. If you're going to help somebody, if you're going to say something that's healing to somebody, anything like that, you know, the opposition is always there. Always.
Always have a
so,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had a lady, a Cherokee woman, I was speaking with her. And we were talking, and I shared the story that I shared with you all about, you know, being pinned and everything. And she said, what a voice. What do you do with your voice? And I said, nothing. You know, that I know of. I said, but I know what I always wanted to do. And she said, what's that? And I said, I just always wanted to be that person, you know, at church, whatever, being the encourager, giving the message.
Yes.
And she says, you know, they tried to silence you at a young age. And I said, yes, they did. I said, but, you know, they're going to keep on trying. Because it's not going to, you know, it's I'm not afraid. It's not going to. And that's what a lot of it is. It's fear. And if the other side can use your fear against you, then that's what they'll try to do. And when I'm talking to people and counseling them, I always tell them, never speak your fears. Ever. Don't utter it. Nothing, because that's a weapon to be used against you. So I always try to face my fear, whatever it is. If I need to tell somebody, which I, you know, almost never try to do that, but, you know, you can write it, you can text it, but never say it out loud, you know, because those, the other side definitely gets a hold of that stuff, and, you know, that's how they get to you. It's you know, they use your fears, and that now that becomes a weapon. So I always tell people there's nothing to fear. Just face it. You know, don't put yourself in a cage. Don't put yourself in that box. Do whatever you can to free yourself. And, it's good wisdom.
Yes. Well, Sherry, let's do this. Let's go to our next news break, and then when we come back, I'd like to concentrate on a couple of things. I want to talk about the mechanics of how you heal and how you reach out. And then I'd also like you to talk about you have actually delivered people from spirits, and if that's okay, can we discuss that a little bit?
Sure.
Okay. Well, everybody, just stick with us. We'll be back in just a few moments. If you'd like to call in, and if you have any questions, comments, anything that you'd like to talk to Sherry about, that number is...
262-672-2488.
Awesome. We did it again.
I'm a love tonight.
All right, everybody. Well, just stick with us, and we'll be right back.
Support for this podcast comes from E-Trade Capital Management. Introducing Adaptive Portfolio, a new way to invest with E-Trade. What is it? It's a diversified managed portfolio that adapts and rebalances as necessary. Visit etrade.com/NPR to learn more.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. The group Boys to Men singing their tribute to Philadelphia and the East Coast at today's Democratic National Convention. Meanwhile, fractures within the Democratic Party are on full display during this opening day of the convention. NPR's Scott Horsley reports Bernie Sanders drew boos today when he urged supporters to back Hillary Clinton.
Many Sanders supporters are unhappy with the primary process that led up to this point, and they're determined to make their displeasure heard. In addition to booing Sanders, they also booed outgoing party chairwoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz at a delegate meeting. They even booed the pastor who delivered the convention's invocation. Organizers are scrambling to present a show of party unity for tonight's primetime television audience. Headline speakers include liberal icon Elizabeth Warren, First Lady Michelle Obama, and Bernie Sanders himself. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Philadelphia.
Democrat Hillary Clinton was spending part of the first day of her party's nominating convention attacking rival Donald Trump's foreign policy, saying she doesn't understand people who, in her words, talk trash about America. Clinton slammed many of the GOP nominees' positions without mentioning them by name. Clinton was speaking at the annual Conference of the Veterans for Foreign Wars as part of a campaign swing through North Carolina. Communications company Verizon is buying internet company Yahoo for more than $4.8 billion in cash. The purchase gives Verizon access to 1 billion active monthly users as it tries to increase its advertising revenues. NPR's Jim Zaroli has more.
Verizon will acquire Yahoo's core internet businesses, but not its patents or its investments in outside companies such as China's Alibaba. Those will be sold separately. Once valued at $125 billion, Yahoo has, over the years, lost a lot of ground to Facebook and Google, and its revenue has steadily fallen. But it still has a lot of users, including 600 million people who access it through mobile devices. A statement said the acquisition will put Verizon in a highly competitive position as a top global mobile media company and help accelerate its revenue stream in digital advertising. Jim Zaroli, NPR News, New York.
The Environmental Protection Agency is out with new rules that would begin curbing emissions from passenger jets. The government's environmental watchdog group saying greenhouse gases from jets endanger public health and beginning the process of regulating such emissions under terms of the Federal Clean Air Act. The EPA has labeled U.S. aircraft as the third biggest source of greenhouse gas emissions from the domestic transportation sector, with increased air traffic expected to push the figure higher. After 4 weeks of relatively strong gains, partly driven by better-than-expected quarterly earnings, investors appear to be taking a breather. The Dow was down 77 points. The Nasdaq fell 2 points today. This is NPR. A California man who pledged loyalty to the Islamic State has been sentenced to 15 years in prison and supervised release for life. 22-year-old Adam Dandock sentenced today in U.S. District Court in Santa Ana. Dandock pleaded guilty last year to attempting to provide material support to a terror group and lying on his passport application. A political reshuffle in South Sudan could have violent ramifications for the world's newest country. NPR's Gregory Warner reports on the ousted vice president who likely will not go quietly.
Riek Machar was a powerful player in South Sudan even before the country won its independence from Sudan in 2011. He leads a major ethnic group called the Nuer, and in 2013, Machar led Nuer ethnic militias against the National Army, loyal to the president. That two-year civil war ended with a peace deal between the rival ethnic groups. But now Machar is back in hiding, and he's facing another ouster, this time from his own deputies. President Salva Kiir announced that Machar will be replaced as vice president with a former ally. The appointment could spark a battle for control between rival militias of the same ethnic group, further complicating humanitarian aid to the hardest-hit areas of the country. Gregory Warner, NPR News, Nairobi.
Something likely to upset quite a few people, a divided Georgia appeals court has ruled a man who admitted to taking cell phone video up a woman's skirt did not break state law. Court calling the incident reprehensible and offensive, but ruling the incident was not an invasion of privacy under Georgia state law. Practice sometimes called upskirting centered around a former grocery store worker who recorded the videos as the woman shopped. I'm Jack Spear, NPR News in Washington.
Hey, y'all. Sam Sanders here, campaign reporter with NPR News. I am at the airport in Dallas. So for more than a year, I have been flying all around the country covering the 2016 election. And now the biggest 2 weeks of it all are here, the Republican and Democratic National Conventions in Cleveland and Philadelphia. It's going to be all over the news. But if the news is a lot to keep up with, do not worry, because we got you. Just keep up with the NPR Politics Podcast. Our team will be at the conventions doing quick daily episodes first thing every morning, every day of both conventions. You will know what's happening, what it all means, without the cable news hangover. Daily episodes start Tuesday, July 19th. All right, subscribe to the NPR Politics Podcast at npr.org/podcast or on the NPR One app. Cool. Thanks. Bye.
You are listening to The Buzz on the ZTalk Radio Network. Imagine the possibilities. Now back to the show with Kevin Thompson and Molly Spence. The best in alternative talk radio.
Okay, everybody, we are back. You're listening to The Buzz on ztalkradio.com. If you'd like to call in with any comments or questions that you may have, that number is 262-672-2488.
We'll so, do it in unison.
Yes, we did. We harmonized. So, before the break, Sherry, there was a couple of things I really, really wanted to get out there, and that is your ability. We've talked a little bit about emotional healing and psychological healing by sharing messages, you know, from, you know, prophetic dreams or messages from the actual deceased themselves, but you also have got a very special gift, and that is the ability to heal through energies. How does that work? How do you do that?
It's very everything. The most important part of it takes place in my mind, because I have to see these things and envision these things. And you know, you heard people talk all the time and say the mind is a very powerful thing. Well, it is. So what your intention is, what you put out there, is what you're going to bring. So I have to envision this. Let's say I have a gentleman friend. His wife contacted me, and he had very bad diabetes and heart condition and everything, and he had peripheral neuropathy?
Yes.
In his feet and legs from the diabetes. And he couldn't feel his feet for a year and was going through a lot of things. So she called me and asked me if I could help him. And I said, sure, you know, I'll do my best. And I will chat with him through text, because I don't do Reiki. It's not a universal light that I use. It is a light that I was given. It's my own energy. and I have to see, it's not like I can say I'm sending this energy and go wherever it's not that way. It's very intricate. I have to see the blood flowing to the tissue and the nerve endings being soothed and all of these things. So it helps that I have a medical knowledge. I've worked in the medical field all my life. So I have to envision these things. And as I'm envisioning them, I'm manipulating the energy field around their body. So I do this remotely. That's kind of the beauty of the gift, that I can reach out and touch somebody who's in Ireland. And they feel me. You know, I'm like, you should be feeling me. And they do. And they're like, you know, very amazed that they can. I mean, I can make somebody feel my breath. Kevin has experienced, he says, it feels like you put your hand through my chest, which really I didn't. it was just my energy. So it's kind of a moving of the energy around that person. And I don't know how to say it. I connect with that person. If it's going to be a deeper healing, so to speak, you know, sometimes I don't have to actually connect spiritually, like I can just envision moving their energy field. If it's a deeper kind of healing, then I have to kind of like, I don't know of a better way to say it, I breathe through that person to where there's kind of like a spirit connection. And then I do it that way. I've had to connect with people who've had breathing problems that can't do what I'm needing them to do during the healing. For lack of, they may not understand what I'm telling them to do, or they can't exhale or inhale the way I need to. So I actually kind of put myself into that person spiritually to breathe in for them and to breathe out. So yeah, what I'm doing is
them.
Breathing in. I have them breathe in like a healing light, like a pink pastel or whatever light, you know, I choose to use. And I will fill their lungs or their stomach, whatever the issue is, with that light, and then exhale black, which is the negative energies and the sickness coming out of their body. So if I can't get that person to do that for themselves while I'm doing the healing, then I have to go in and do that for them. So it's intricate.
Well, I think you gave us a perfect example with your dream. You picked up a baby in your dream that was choking on seaweed. Spirit or Holy Spirit right then, bam. Oh, I'm goosebumping right now just thinking about it. You put that baby over your shoulder. Spirit gave you the gift, and you exhaled the seaweed that the baby was choking on. So that was
right.
An illustration of how you're going to work in the future.
Right. Yeah. And it's kind of, I don't know how to say it, but it's kind of like an inherent knowing. It just comes. When I need the information, it comes. I don't quite know how to tell you, because it's not like somebody sat down and told me, okay, this is what you need to do. I've been given the information as I've needed it.
Yes. You went to the School of Hard Knocks, too, so.
Yes. I had my nephew who's the same age as my daughter, they grew up together like brother and sister, about, I guess, 6 years ago, or maybe seven, something like that, he was in an airboat accident and lost his leg. And I remember getting the call, and I was driving, and it just paralyzed me. I couldn't breathe. I had to pull over, and I didn't even know how to get home because I was in so much shock. And then I was like, how do I help him? How? I need to help him. I need to help him. And a friend of mine at the time had healing gifts, and that's kind of where I learned a lot of things, too. And he forced me, I was freaking out, and he forced me. He's like, stop it. You need to be able to help your nephew. You need to focus. You know, you need to put emotion aside, and you need to focus. And that's where, you know, I kind of use my hands to scan the energy around his body to see where the injury was, and trying to stop the blood flow, you know, because it cut an artery.
Oh.
And then when he was, after that, when they were trying to, he had to have a few surgeries, and he was a diabetic also. And that was very hard because, you know, being diabetic, the tissue doesn't want to heal quickly. Mm-hmm. And so they were trying to do another surgery for him, and the tissue just wasn't cooperating. And I remember staying up almost all night. And I never said anything. I never said anything to the family. I didn't say anything to him either, but I just stayed up all night. And in my mind, I had to see that tissue being healthy, being healed, and just sending my energy and, you know, and just healing it. And I get a phone call the next day. His tissue has improved. They're going to do the surgery. And that was just such a relief and the best feeling in the world, where you just go, thank you, God, you know, and you helped. And to me, that was just amazing. So that showed me to, okay, you know, now I do it. Most of the healing that I do is remote, because I can't be in the same room with somebody, especially if they're in another country or another state. So I just kind of put myself there spiritually, just to do it that way, energy wise. But like I said, it's all me. It's not Reiki. It's not me saying, okay, I take the white light of the universe and, you know, and all of that. It's just like, okay, it's me. That's it. Here we go.
So you exchange places with the client, for lack of better terms, the injured or the sick, and purify them in a sense.
Well, it's like I kind of put myself there. I'm next to them.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm having, in my mind, I'm having to see what their issue is, and saying, okay, you know, like I said, with the diabetic,
yes, like an MRI.
I've got to envision the blood flow going to this person's feet. I've got to see the tissue being healed and restored. I have to see the tendons and the nerve endings being healed and restored. And with that healing, he was just so happy. He said, Sherry, I haven't felt my feet in over a year. This is the first time that I can wiggle my toes and feel my feet. And just to know that you've done something good and helped somebody is just amazing. And I'm so, so honored that that gift was given to me.
Now, yesterday you and I discussed something that was very important, and concerning these healings, the person has got to be willing and be accepting and receptive to this.
Absolutely. You cannot... you know, in the same way that we're given free will to choose good or bad or whatever it is that we do, and, you know, God doesn't step in and impose on that. You have to ask. You know, if you want his help, you have to ask. It's the same way. If somebody wants healing or needs healing, they have to ask me. I mean, I can offer it, and I can say, hey, I'm here for you. Do you want me to help you? They have to agree. They have to say yes. They have to say they're willing. Otherwise, I cannot touch them.
And I would say that's reasonable.
I cannot impinge on somebody's free will, and it won't happen, and I will never do that, because I don't want my gifts to be taken away. It's a responsibility. Anybody with gifts, it is a responsibility that you have. A lot of people say, well, why can't I have those gifts? Or I would like to have that gift. It sounds neat, right? We all say, oh, I would like to be able to do that. I would like to have that gift. Hey, I'd like to be able to talk to spirit. I'd like to be able, but what they don't understand, and you can ask, and Kevin, I'm sure you can tell people and anybody else with gifts, what we had to experience in the beginning, the scary parts, to get to the good parts. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
The things that we've had to go through, or like I said, that, you know, being pinned in these things, and the fear of being ridiculed, and the fear of, you know, nobody understanding, and not knowing, and what it does to you as a person, what it does to your self-esteem when people don't understand. Those are the things that people don't understand. They think you just wake up and it's like, hello, I can talk to this. It doesn't work that way. And,
yes,
you know, people are given the gift because you have a responsibility. You have a responsibility to use it in the proper way and to use it for good.
And sometimes it's still scary or it's still wearing on you. And sometimes it can be psychologically damaging.
Oh, yeah. Because you don't know. Or when the attacks come, you know, now you're having to battle that.
Or who they're from.
I'm sorry?
Or even who the attacks are going to come from.
Right.
For example, and share this if you like, if you feel okay with it, but you've actually had to deliver people from evil spirits before.
Yeah. I had a family member that when he was little, I had moved up here to live, you know, with my sister because I was very ill at the time. And he was 3 or 4. And I just noticed in his demeanor and his eyes. His eyes were very different. They were dark and he was very what's the word? If you told him not to do something, you would just get this look and he would stare you right in the face and do it anyway.
Exactly.
And for a child that age, it's very disconcerting and you're looking and it's like you don't want to think this thing, you don't want to believe it, yet it's staring you in the face. And of course, trying to tell their parents, hey, there's something going on, you know, the parents are afraid, they don't want to know. They look at you like you're the crazy one, you know. So he was like this. I mean, everything was very deliberate, and it was scary because at one point I thought, if this child had a gun in his hand and we told him not to shoot it or pull the trigger, I felt very strongly that he would do it just to do it.
Just to spite you.
Yeah. So I was babysitting one night, and we were watching TV, and we were laying on the bed, and he got on top of me with his hands around my throat and looked me dead in the eye and told me he was going to kill me. And I realized who I was talking to, and it certainly wasn't my nephew. And I said, really? I said, I don't think so. And it took every ounce of strength that I had to get that child off of me, because it was strength that no 3-year-old should have. And I started recognizing this, and it was daily little things. And, you know, I would stay in my room and pray and, you know,
well, that was kind of a dead giveaway there.
I'm sorry?
I said him saying he's going to kill you. That's kind of a dead giveaway there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the next day, I was in the living room sitting on the chair watching TV, and he was on the couch. And he just had that glare in his eye just staring at me, and I thought, well, here we go. And he was making, like, a hand sign, a hand signal, kind of like what the kids use for, like, you know, I don't know.
Baphomet.
Like the, yeah. For like the sign of the devil or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept pointing it at me, and I said, stop that. And he put his hand on his belly and just did this belly laugh, like that's exactly what it sounded like. And I was like, oh Lord. And just kept doing it. And I said, okay, if you're going to do that, then I'm going to make my own sign. And as I made the sign of the cross, he jumped off of that chair, off the couch, and jumped on me and started licking me like a dog. And I was very hard to get him off of me. So, you know, I knew what I was dealing with, and I, you know, did a binding and rebuking for a minute there to get him off of me. And a few days later, the child just went just crazy on his sister. Just so much anger and the curse words that were coming out of his mouth were like, you just knew. No three-year-old has this vocabulary. So I snatched him up, and I told my sister, and I told everybody else, don't nobody come in this room until I come out. And I took the child in the room, and I just started binding and rebuking and casting out and, you know, praying over him until he just went limp in my arms. And totally different child since then. He's an absolutely wonderful kid. Eye color different, lighter. He's very super smart, very loving, just everything, but what a drastic difference. And I thought, well, yeah. Alrighty then. You know, and it's happened, you know, my husband was an alcoholic, and so I was always in battle. You know, he would drink, and there would be dark shadows on him that I had to deal with. Every day was a battle. Every single day was a battle. And I always say there's a reason why they call alcohol spirits.
Had your nephew's parents noticed anything different about him when he was around?
Yes and no. I mean, they did, but
they just
didn't want to believe anything. They just, and almost at times, my sister would laugh, only because that was her nervous way of dealing with things. And some of the things that he did were, you know, she just thought it was funny, or thinking, wow, you know, like, you know, how could a 3 or 4 year old be doing this? And it was, you know what I mean? It was kind of like, in some spots they thought maybe it was cute, but then again, it's not. And they refused to think that there was anything there. And I said, well, they're not going to do anything about it. I need to. So.
I'm glad you're there for him.
Yeah. Imagine what would have happened if you hadn't have intervened.
Yeah. And we're very close to this day. And like I said, he's a wonderful kid. But these things pop up. You know, even, you know, the enemy will use the people closest to you to get to you. Mm-hmm. And it's usually your family members. So it's like you kind of always have to be on guard, and those were things that I had to learn too, that it's not this person, it's not this family member that I'm fighting. It's the enemy. And then that's a whole different ball game. You know, I had my husband was drinking one night, and the dark shadow was there, and, you know, was just verbally attacking me. And he was going to go out to some place I didn't want him to go. And we argued, and I kind of didn't want to go any further because my daughter was home and her friend. So I, you know, was trying to keep things calm. And I just, when he walked out the door, I chained it. And I said, you're not coming back in. You can sleep in your van. And, you know, 5 minutes later, he's pounding on the door wanting to come in. And when I opened the door and he came and he went to fix another drink, and you know, that dark shadow was there. And the verbal lashing started coming, and it was right then, and I just said, get behind me, Satan. You have the mind of man, not the mind of Christ. Get out. In the name of Jesus Christ, get away from me. He got right in my face and said, you just invited me back in. And I said, no. I invited my husband, not you. Get out. And that's when he went and passed out in the bedroom. So these things were often... So I never know. I never know where it's coming from. You just have to be prepared. You have to be spiritually prepared.
So it's kind of a curse sometimes.
Sometimes, yes, it is.
That's why
I said there's a responsibility.
Yeah, and how do you describe
it's
that?
Not all fun.
You can't really describe that to anybody.
No. So. It's kind of like you have to be... I mean, it's... Because people will go, you know, like, yeah. You know.
Now, I'm sorry.
No,
Oh, well, kind of shifting gears into something a little more positive. When you do a healing, now you and I have talked at length about diet and nutrition. Mm-hmm. After you do a healing for somebody, do you also advise them in how to maintain that state of health with your nutritional knowledge?
Yes, because a lot of times in the spirit and the knowledge, and let's say reading that person or scanning that person, you know, it'll come to me that, okay, this person may have a vitamin B deficiency, or, you know, they're lacking in certain minerals and things like that. So, you know, I do tell them, you know, this is, you know, what you should be taking. This is something that you should, you know, incorporate into your diet, something that you should avoid. Always. What's led to me, you know, like I said, I have to scan. In other words, what I mean by that is, when I'm going to do a healing for somebody, in my mind and with my hands, I am scanning that person's body, and where there's pain, I'll feel like a pain and stinging on the top of my hands. If there's inflammation, I'm feeling heat and burning. If there's a blockage, and then it feels like a blockage. So, in doing this, that's telling me where their problem is. I do ask what their diet's like, and then I just give the counsel of, you know, what they should or shouldn't take, you know, to help their body and things like that.
Like Pabst.
Yes.
No PBR. Yeah.
No PBR.
What's that? Blue ribbon?
Yes.
Oh, sure. I understand what Kevin said. And that when you said PBR, I thought, okay, Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Yes.
Well, I told him, and what I tell a lot of people, for the most part, when we're struggling with diabetes, high blood pressure, things like that, our body is in dis-ease. And when you put those two together, it's disease. The majority of our problems come from a lack of either magnesium, calcium, a mineral, something. But our diets are horrible. Let's face it, Americans consume a lot of processed food. A lot of people drink a lot of soda, which is very acidic. So the more acidic your body is, the more it's going to bring about disease. So your arthritis is going to grow a whole lot faster. It's going to, you know, your body's going to start to break down. And in the case of the Pabst Blue Ribbon with Kevin, it's yeast. So people don't understand. Mm-hmm. People get treated for all these different diseases, and they take all these different medications when the culprit is yeast. So yeast is an organism. It's a bug. And if you see the way, if you mix yeast with water and everything, how it starts to grow and multiply, that's what it's doing in your gut. So when I see somebody who carries their weight in the front, in their upper stomach, that's yeast. And if you look up like fibromyalgia and candidiasis, which is yeast overgrowth, they're the exact same symptoms. And you get brain fog, you get headaches, you get constant sinus infections, yeast infections, fatigue, malaise, body aches, mood swings. It even affects your periods. All of these things is yeast. And when you mix yeast, let's say you eat bread, you're a big bread eater, right? And you're consuming sugars. The yeast and the sugar start to ferment in your body. And that becomes alcohol. So when you wake up and you're like disoriented and you have brain fog, that's what's happening. You know, you're drunk. My nutritionist told me that when I was 12. And even older, you know, when I was older, after I had my daughter, and I was so, Kevin and I talked about this, I was so bloated and red and puffy. And he would always put me on a yeast-free diet, and he hadn't seen me in forever. And when I went in, he was like, you know, what the heck happened to you? And took me off of that. And when I told him what I was experiencing, he says, you're drunk. And I said, no, I don't drink. He goes, oh, no, yes, you are. Because the yeast and the sugar was fermenting. And you know what? That's exactly how I felt. I would wake up in the morning and just feel like I was hungover, and I would be in a very bad mood and not wanting to talk to people and just not a morning person. And I would bang into walls all the time. Or if I was walking next to somebody, next thing you know, I'm like cutting in front of them or walking sideways because I was very off balance. And that was like, okay. So I learned that at a young age. And so I recognize those things too when a person comes in and is saying these things. And, you know, but not everybody wants to give up the good stuff, especially in the South, biscuits and cornbread and all of that.
Well, we have a caller on the line. Veronique, is that you?
Yes, it is.
Hello.
Hi. Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
Hey,
what about
Molly, Miss Molly. Oh, my goodness. Miss Molly, hello. How are you, dear?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Yes,
I miss you. I mean, I didn't mean to not say your name. Anyway.
Kevin.
No. Go ahead, V.
Yes. Okay. Anyway, I was wanting to talk about when Sherry was talking about her husband and the bad shadow that was following him and all that. I would say about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I had a friend of my daughter's that stayed with us. She was to stay with us for about 3 weeks. And the first day, I'm like, okay. By the second day, we all got sick, my daughter, my mother, and myself. We just did not know what it was. And every time I saw that girl, I was just getting so even sicker. My stomach was going down. I felt nauseous. So I went, and she was staying in my other daughter's room. And I went to see her, and I said, hey, listen, I got to talk to you, and this is what's going on. And I said, and I basically told her, you can't stay here. I'm going to have to say it. I'm going to have to do all kind of stuff because you are just bad juju kind of a thing. And she looked at me, and her face seemed as though it was shifting.
Sinister. Very sinister.
Her eyes were like deep and black, and just like, and I'm like, oh my gosh. I said, I got to get out of here. And I was sick. My mother was sick. We just could not talk. We just were kind of stuck. And I said, okay. So I called my daughter, went to work, and I said, she's got to be out by tomorrow morning. Something's following her. There's a black cloud was following her every time she walked, and it was just so bad, I kid you not, and she just left. We were all too much affected by her, but I know exactly what Sherry was saying.
Can I ask you something? I know we were talking about this today with your daughter, and now this makes a whole lot of sense. Have you checked the bedroom? Did she leave something behind that you don't know of? Because I'm sure she was angry that you told her she had to go. Is there something that she could have left behind in the bedroom?
Mm-hmm. I looked. I made sure I put holy water, and I said Hail Marys and Glory Bees, and I prayed and asked the St. Michael, the Archangel. I mean, I did it. You name it. I told him to go. And then after that, then I staged. I put salt. I had a couple of candles in there. And
check under the mattress. You need to check underneath the mattress that something, some little token of something wasn't left behind. And like I told you today, when it's something dark like that, sage isn't going to cut it. You're just going to make it mad. You're going to have to get frankincense. Yeah. Frankincense is biblical, and you need to do frankincense and the holy water. But sage, at that point, when it's something kind of evil like that, sage isn't going to help you.
Okay, I will do the frankincense. Frankenstein.
Frankincense.
Yeah, because I had to do that when my daughter got back from college because of the house she was living. It was just a lot of spirits in there. But so I make sure I cleanse the room, cleanse all her belonging, her clothes, everything. Because it was just so bad. But I guess I'll have to do the Frankenstein.
Well, you need to look. I have a feeling and that I'm being shown some little, I don't even know what it is. It's some little thing, but there's something that she left behind on purpose.
Okay. I will look and check. I made sure I had a crucifix there. The Bible. I had all kind of things while she was there. Nothing, she didn't take anything away. I don't think anything was broken, any of these things. Really just was broken, but I will definitely look. You said I could do the mattress, maybe?
Yeah. And somewhere that's inconspicuous that you wouldn't normally see. It's not going to be put out anywhere that you could see. It's going to be hidden. It could be in a drawer. It could be underneath the mattress in the box spring. It could even be up under the bed, underneath, like on the railing, or you know what I'm saying, like up underneath the bed where you're not going to see it. You need to be thorough.
Okay, I will. And my youngest daughter came on vacation a little bit, and she left yesterday. And when I picked her from the airport, I explained to her what had happened, and I said, go in your room, and then if you feel anything, because she's an empath, if you feel anything, you tell me, and we're going to work on it. So she went in, she stayed a little bit, and she said, I don't feel anything, I don't sense anything. So I kind of left it at that. But now that you're telling me that, I'm going to have to go check her room.
Yeah, just to be double sure.
Does that room have a ceiling light, Bernie?
Sorry?
Does that room have a ceiling light? A light?
I don't think they're all on.
No, I mean, is there a fixture to the ceiling?
Yes.
We'll check it.
Yeah. Any place that you wouldn't normally look because you pissed it off. You pissed her off that you were making her leave. And when you saw a face change like that, I mean, that's a big clue right there.
I've never seen that ever. I mean, I've seen a spirit when I got the move. I was attacked when I did investigations. I get that. But in a living person... Oh my gosh, that was bad. I was gonna throw up. Just being in the room. So okay, well definitely check every corner and look and cranny in a room then.
But I'm getting the ceiling fixture for some reason.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
I will go and check that. After I hang up, I'll hurry and then come back down. But thank you so much for taking my
thank
call.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sherry. And I'm going to hang up and then keep listening.
Okay.
Thank you, guys.
Awesome. Thank you, V.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, Sherry, we've only got a few minutes left in the show. How would somebody be able to get in touch with you? And learn from you and or perhaps ask you for help with their own abilities, discovering their abilities.
Anybody can reach out to me. You can private message me on Facebook. It's under Sherry, Sheri, Mitchell, Mitchell, Webb, Webb. You have to send me a private message. You can also email me at smwebb8@gmail.com. And I'd be happy to help.
Because this is kind of a... Well, you've been on shows before, but this one's kind of a coming out for you, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't really, you know, advertise myself as such, or you know, I'm certainly not kind of like everybody else being like the investigators or putting up. I don't like do readings and things like that. Not as far as, you know, getting money for readings that way.
No, we don't either.
So, huh?
Oh, we don't either.
No, it's all about helping somebody. And I have had wonderful, wonderful people, Kevin, that you and I are friends with. I've had wonderful people that were there for me, and are still there for me. All I need to do is pick up the phone and call, and they're there, and that's what it's all about. It's about being there for each other and helping each other. And again, they're gifts, so you have to share them. So,
absolutely, they're gifts, not rentals.
Exactly. I mean, you know, Christ Himself doing healings didn't say, "Hey, by the way, buddy, you owe me $50, or you owe me $50. You know, I just healed you and gave you back your sight." No, it's about, you know, paying it forward and truly having the heart to help somebody who's in despair. And when you're putting out that goodness, then the goodness comes back to you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But. Well, any final thoughts that you, or any final advice that you would give to anybody who's struggling with their gifts or trying to learn or feel their way through this?
Yes. I would like to say first, you know, don't fear it. There's a lot of people that I know that have gifts and they'll say they absolutely don't want anything to do with it. My daughter herself, she has gifts and she's always been like, "I don't want it. I'm afraid." And I know that she's going to, you know, come into it when it's her time, when she's ready. Don't fear, but ask why. Don't be like me saying, "I don't want it, I don't want it, I don't want it," if it's not from you, and never asking. Ask what your gifts are. Ask what you should be doing with those gifts to help somebody. Pray for teachers, good teachers, the right ones to come along and light the way for you so you know how to use those gifts. And treat it with respect. It's not like you wake up and go, "Oh, hey, I'm psychic," and, you know, so I'm going to, you know, become this money-making machine for, you know, being a psychic. And granted, I'm not saying anything about anybody else. That's their livelihood and that's what they do. I'm not knocking it at all. I'm just saying how I am. But I think the responsibility lies in why were you given that gift and how can you use it to help somebody else in the greatest sense. So when you don't know, you know, spirit helps you. Your guides, we are all given guides. We are all given angels, and they are there to help you. You have to ask them. Again, it's in the asking. Again, you have to ask. You have to give permission. So ask.
And it's that easy.
It's that easy.
No.
And, you know, and just realize that it's a blessing. A lot of people do see it as a curse because they're afraid of it and they don't know. But sooner or later, you know, you can't run from it. Sooner or later, you're going to have to, you know, acknowledge it and acknowledge that you are set apart. Embrace it and that you're set apart for a reason and that you have a responsibility and use it.
Yes. Well, Sherry, thank.
And it's how you use it. If I could say one last thing.
Sure.
Kids, I mean, I would love to do something. Veronique and I were talking about helping kids who are unsure because there are a lot of indigo children and there are a lot of kids being born and so much more now with gifts. And the way that the world is and the way that the times are, it is so easy for those children to take those gifts and go to the dark side with it because they're looking for attention or they're angry. And that happens a lot, and it causes a lot of problems, and it truly detriments that person's life. So, again, learning to use it in the right way. If you're a parent and you have a child with gifts, if you don't know, find somebody who can help you. If you're not understanding of their gifts, find them somebody to talk to, but don't tell them that it's nothing or that there's no such thing as ghosts or, you know, that it's all in their head. You need to embrace that, and you need to allow that child to feel free to speak and to use those gifts and to not, you know, squash the goodness that was given to them.
Yeah, Kevin and I do a lot of counseling like that. There for a while.
I wish I'd have had it.
Freak.
Yeah, and it's important, and it's so good that you do that because I didn't have anybody to help me at all. I had nobody to talk to, and that was the loneliest feeling in the world.
I knew I was different than everyone else, but I didn't know why.
Right.
You know, for a long time.
You know, up until 13, 14 years ago, Molly, I was saying the same thing. What is my purpose? Why am I here? What do I have to show for anything? What do I have to give? And a friend of mine, he's like a brother, he calls me Sherry Bell, and he's like, sometimes, Sherry Bell, your purpose is just to be. And I had to be okay with that for a moment. And then when I got out of that, you know, bad situation, that's when everything started to unfold.
Well, I think everything comes in its own time, too. You don't expect it to be there all at once. All your gifts can be shown at one time, but you have to take it gradually and, you know, and work up to it and go on from one step to the next. But I was going to ask, why do you think the number five, like 5 years old for most gifted people, why is that a magic number? I know I was five when I first started realizing what I had, you know, my gift.
I think, you know, they say we gain a certain amount of our learning and our brain power between the ages of 3 and 5. And I think that's around 5, I think, is when we just start putting things together and being able to. I mean, you're becoming more aware, like you're moving into that next stage. You're not an infant or a toddler to where you don't understand. I think 5 is kind of the beginning of understanding.
Thank you. But there are so many people that we've interviewed even, you know, and said, well, it started around age 5. And, you know, that seems the magic number.
Because that's when we're starting to put everything else together. That now everything is making sense, and every, you know, you're leaving, you have already left that toddler stage, and now you're moving into more of an awareness of everything.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, Sherry, we're up against the clock. We thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You're wonderful, and you did fine. I know you were a little bit nervous at first, but we're just a bunch of friends sitting around a coffee table.
There you go. If I've helped one person, then it's, you know, everything is worth it.
You know what? And you have. You have helped people. And we've got, you know, you've been looking in the chat room. There's people out there listening that oftentimes don't come into the chat room, and those are the ones that are out there listening, and they're the ones that are getting the message, and they're the ones that need it. And God may not always do it when we need him to, but he's always on time. Make sense?
Right.
So those that don't get to listen to us live, they can pick it up in the chat room. There is no distance and there's no time in spirit. So
everything happens and comes together when it's supposed to.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, I can attest to that.
Well, we've got a few seconds left in the show. Everybody, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll be back next Monday night at the same time, the same place. Everybody, we will...
I'm not in the chat room right this second, so if you want to type in my email or my Facebook page, if somebody wasn't able to...
Okay, yeah.
If spelling or anything for them to private message me, you can.
Yep, I've got the link already on Facebook.
Okay.
All right, everybody. Well, coming up next here in the next minute or so is Al Warren's House of Mystery. So stay tuned. And everybody, we'll see you next week. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
This has been a Spooky Scotty production.